Right now, I'm joined on the phone by Deborah Gerner. She is a professor of political science at the University of Kansas. She's also co-director of the Center for International Political Analysis and a member of the editorial committee of the Middle East Report. She is editor of Understanding the Contemporary Middle East and author of One Land, Two Peoples, The Conflict Over Palestine. Hello, Deborah. Can you hear me?
I sure can. Glad to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining me today. We don't have a whole lot of time, so we'll just jump right in. There's been a lot in the news, quite a bit in the news over recent weeks and months, about this Gaza disengagement. And I'm wondering what your perspective on the use of the term disengagement is when speaking about Gaza. That's the general term that's been used to describe the pullout.
I think the whole idea of calling what's occurring disengagement is very misleading, actually, because what really is happening is that a limited number of Israeli settlements are being removed, and the settlers are being forced to vacate their homes. But the Israeli military is retaining the right to go back into Gaza at any point that it so chooses. So what we really are seeing is a redeployment of troops, not a permanent withdrawal. So disengagement, I think, is quite misleading. The other thing is that because Israel is going to still maintain control of access in and out of Gaza, it doesn't really free the Gazan Palestinians to move easily from place to place. It's just that their prison has gotten a bit larger than it once was.
And when you say, when you describe Gaza as a prison, can you justify that definition, that description?
Sure. Gaza is a fairly small area, and it's bordered by the Mediterranean and by Israel and by the Sinai. And because Israel controls access in and out of the area, people who live in Gaza really are not free to travel outside of Gaza without the permission of the Israeli government. So that's why I call it a big prison. To be sure, it's going to be easier and better for Palestinians not to be confronting Israeli troops on a daily basis, but they don't have freedom of movement to travel internationally. They don't have freedom of movement to work in other places. So that's why it's really still a big prison.
Not even in Egypt?
No, not even in Egypt. There still is going to be control over that access as well.
You said recently that the actions, the pullout in Gaza, that you feel that's effectively distracting world attention from the continuing construction of the separation barrier in East Jerusalem and the West Bank, as well as a range of other Israeli policies detrimental to all Palestinians. Can you go into that in a little more detail?
Sure, and I think that's something that Mr. Lotterby will be talking about also. But while the rest of the world is paying attention to the Gaza, quote, disengagement, what we see happening is that the separation barrier is continuing to be built at a very rapid pace. And in particular, and most frighteningly from the point of view of Palestinians, it seems that East Jerusalem, which is really critical to any two-state solution of the ongoing conflict, is being cut off by the separation barrier from the rest of the West Bank. At the same time that that's occurring, there are increases in Palestinian home demolitions, and there is an expansion of Israeli settlement activity within what Israel refers to as Greater Jerusalem, which is actually an expansion of Jerusalem into what was previously known of as the West Bank. So what we're getting is a kind of consolidation of control over Jerusalem and a consolidation of control over the settlements in the West Bank, a confiscation of Palestinian land. Probably another 10 to 15% of the West Bank is being confiscated by this separation barrier. And nobody is really paying any attention to that.
So is your argument essentially that the Israeli government is using this Gaza pullout as cover for solidifying their hold and continued appropriation of land in the West Bank and their continued construction of the wall?
That's certainly a big part of my argument, yes. In addition, though, I have to say that the majority of Israelis are not nearly as committed to maintaining control of Gaza as they are committed to maintaining parts of the West Bank. It doesn't have the same kind of religious significance to religious Jews. It is not a popular place for Israeli soldiers to serve. The number of settlers there is quite small, somewhere between 7,000 and 8,000 settlers, compared to between 1.2 and 1.4 million Palestinians. And so getting rid of Gaza is a good thing from Israel's point of view, even apart from its secondary function as a very convenient smoke screen so that we don't notice what's going on in Jerusalem and in the West Bank.
And the reason is that you're arguing that Gaza is actually sapping the Israeli government, maintaining those settlements in there with only, you know, less than 10,000 settlers, is actually sapping them, you know, militarily, financially, and they're deciding, well, Sharon at least is deciding it's not worth that. It's a military strategic decision. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that that's certainly a big part of it for Sharon. Not that the other is not also relevant. And in fact, I think the smokescreen argument is the stronger of the two arguments. But it's very, very clear that it's been clear for at least a decade and probably longer than that most Israelis would just as soon get rid of Gaza. It's a pain in the butt for them. There's no reason for them to hold on to it, and it's a huge drain on Israeli resources.
You also said that this is kind of a one-sided, that although it appears to be a positive development for both Israelis and Palestinians, its benefits are actually quite one-sided. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. Well, part of it is what I just said, which is that the Palestinians are going to get rid of day-to-day Israeli presence, but that's really all they're going to get, whereas Israel is going to save huge amounts of money. It's going to be able to no longer have soldiers in a very dangerous situation, that is, being in Gaza. They can go ahead and take the actions that they're taking in the West Bank, but say to the international community, look what we did in Gaza. We've already withdrawn. This shows good faith on our part. So they're winning lots of political points in the international community for what they're doing at really very little cost to them. So that's why I see it as a one-sided deal. I also think, though, that it's important to say that the settlers who are in Gaza, some of them are there for religious reasons, but a lot of them are there for economic reasons. They went to Gaza because the Israeli government encouraged them to do so. It gave them huge economic benefits. It gave them all sorts of rhetorical reasons why they should go to Gaza. And so there's a certain sense in which the government has manipulated them now twice, first by saying they should go to Gaza, and then when they did so, now saying, no, we've changed our mind, now you should leave Gaza. And from my perspective, of course, they should leave Gaza because their presence there is a violation of international law. But it's important, I think, to recognize that the settlers who are there, some of them really did choose to be there for religious or nationalist reasons, but others were there to take advantage of the benefits that the Israeli government provided to settlers. And so they're really being used as pawns in a political game.
Interesting. I've noticed that in the media, in the mainstream media, there's been a huge amount of focus on this Gaza, quote unquote, disengagement. And a lot of it's been focused on, oh, look at these poor settlers being uprooted. There's been references to the settlements. The adjective that's often used to describe them is disputed. Not illegal, which is what they are under international law. What do you make of things like the use in the media of terms like disputed Jewish settlements on occupied land, like using that adjective to describe those settlements?
Clearly, there's a great deal of pressure that's being put on the media, not only in the United States, but in other countries as well, although I think it's more pronounced in the United States, to change the rhetoric about how we discuss Israeli occupation. And this use of the term disputed rather than occupied is simply the most egregious example of that. There is no question in my mind, nor in the mind of the vast majority of the world's countries, that the West Bank, East Jerusalem, Gaza, and also the Golan Heights, which is Syrian, are all occupied territory under international law. That's not something about which there's any disagreement. But by referring to these territories as disputed rather than as occupied, it's a way of neutralizing what's really going on and making it seem as though there are two sides that are much more even than they really are. It ignores the international law dimension and makes it seem as though this is just a disagreement, like a couple who is having a disagreement about where they're going to go to dinner or something, rather than it being a profoundly important violation of international law.
Where are the settlers that are being pulled out of Gaza now going to go? And also, what kind of compensation, if any, are they being offered? I read that each Israeli family that obeys the government's orders to leave Gaza will receive as much as $300,000 under Sharon's plan. I read that in the San Jose Mercury News yesterday. What is being offered to them? What kind of compensation, and where will they go?
Well, here's one of the ironies, is that some of the settlers who are in Gaza are the same people who were first moved out of the Sinai when Israel signed the peace agreement with Egypt and then took the settlers out of the Sinai Peninsula. So those people are now being moved a second time and benefiting from this compensation. In terms of where they're going to go, there are a lot of different choices for them. There are some new towns that are being built very near to Gaza, and some people are planning on going there. Some are going to join other settlements in the West Bank. So some will go into pre-67 Israel. Some will go into the West Bank, which is occupied territory. Some will go into the expanded East Jerusalem settlements. There are a lot of different options. And, of course, there's a group of people who are saying that they will refuse to leave, although it seems quite clear to me that the military is prepared to use force to remove them, and so I don't think that there will be settlers in Gaza in another month. In terms of compensation, the compensation that they get depends on the size of the property that they own, how long they've been there, and so forth, but it is significant compensation. There's no question about that. And so they, in a sense, are benefiting twice. They benefited from being able to live on land at a very inexpensive price for many, many years, to get water at cheap rates, to have a very protected environment for their children and so forth. And now they're going to benefit economically a second time by leaving.
I want to read a quote to you that was in the San Jose Mercury News yesterday and get your reaction. It was a Palestinian attorney, Michael Tarazi, and he was talking about how he was referring to how some of the greenhouses that the Israeli settlers will be leaving behind are going to be purchased with international funds and transferred to Palestinians. He said, "We are pleased that we will be able to decide what to do with them." And then he went on to say, "It is somewhat obscene that settlers are being given compensation when Palestinian refugees have not been compensated for years." And I'm assuming he means both the compensation for the property as well as for the incentive to relocate without resisting. I'm wondering what you make of his comment.
Well, I think he's accurate, would be the short answer. I understand why, from a political standpoint, the Sharon government feels that it needs to give significant compensation to the Israeli settlers who are leaving. But it is abundantly clear that the Palestinians, including the 4+ million who are refugees outside of any part of mandatory Palestine, have never been compensated. Those Palestinians who have had their land confiscated within pre-67 Israel, many of them were not compensated. Some of them were offered compensation but refused it because they felt it would legitimize what they felt was an illegal stealing of their land. But in the case of the Palestinians who are losing territory right now because of the separation barrier, for instance, they're not receiving compensation. So, I mean, he's absolutely correct. He's also, I think, alluding to the fact that, although he doesn't say so in the part of the quote that you just read, that this process of so-called disengagement is going to take a tremendous toll on Palestinians in the short run, as well as Israelis. It's going to involve huge limitations on Palestinian movement. It's going to jeopardize Palestinian access to things like health care and other essential services. And there are going to be closures. There are going to be curfews. And no one is talking about any kind of compensation or remuneration or any kind of way of rewarding the Palestinians or even acknowledging the inconvenience, huge inconvenience, that the disengagement, in quotes, is going to create for them as well.
We only have a few minutes left. I'm wondering if you could just conclude by kind of summarizing your thoughts and feelings on this and just answering the question, what do you think the most important thing or, you know, few things about this Gaza pullout that Americans should need to understand and what you think our role is?
That's a big question to try to do quickly.
I know.
But I think the most important things to keep in mind, to reiterate what we've already talked about, are first that this is a redeployment. It is not a permanent withdrawal. Israeli troops could go back in at any time. And so its significance is not nearly as great as it's being made out to be. That would be number one. Number two, that the attention being given to the Gaza, quote, withdrawal is distracting attention away from very serious violations of human rights which are occurring in the West Bank and specifically in East Jerusalem around the issues of the wall, the separation barrier, and also the expansion of settlements. And that third, and we haven't not really talked about this very much, that there's likely to be a certain amount of destabilization within the Palestinian community over this issue, as well as potentially some destabilization within the Israeli political system over this decision. In terms of what the United States should be doing, it seems quite clear to me that the United States needs to follow what it claims that it believes in, which is international law, and to cease being the one country who is constantly vetoing United Nations Security Council resolutions condemning the kinds of actions that we've been talking about.
And what can Americans do to ensure that our government changes their policy?
Well, there's the usual long list of things that you can try to do, which is individuals can support political candidates and representatives currently in office who have policies consistent with what I've just outlined. One of the things that is often said is that people are not very good at thanking their congressional representatives when they vote in ways consistent with what one thinks, that we're much more likely to criticize representatives than we are to thank them and to reward them. We have a political system where money, for instance, is one of the ways in which you reward people by giving contributions to their campaigns. But I also think the United States can serve a more active role. Individuals can serve a more active role by participating in groups like International Solidarity Movement or the Christian Peacemaker Teams. They can educate themselves. They can educate others. They can go to the region, and they can provide financial support to Palestinian communities that are being damaged by the human rights violations.
Thanks so much for your time today, Deborah. I really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Have a nice evening.
Good night.
Bye. That was Deborah Gerner. She is a professor of political science at the University of Kansas. She's co-director of the Center for International Political Analysis and a member of the editorial committee of Middle East Report. Gerner is editor of Understanding the Contemporary Middle East, 2004, and author of One Land, Two Peoples, The Conflict Over Palestine.